Hello and welcome. I'm Brian Kennedy, and you are tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Public Radio. We begin with a look at the latest news. The ruling Social Democrats have slipped further in opinion polls, despite replacing the Prime Minister, the CVVM agency showed on Thursday. The poll was conducted between April 18th and April 25th, during which time former Regional Development Minister Jiří Paroubek replaced Stanislav Gross as Prime Minister, amid allegations of unethical behavior surrounding Mr. Gross's personal finances and his wife's business dealings. The new CVVM poll puts the Social Democrats at 10.5% support, compared with 14.5% support 1 month ago. In related news, users of Czech Public Television's internet site have named former Prime Minister Stanislav Gross the third greatest scoundrel in Czech history, behind the late communist leader Klement Gottwald and the current Czech president Václav Klaus. Revelers from the northwest of England could be given codes of conduct to stop them from causing trouble in European cities, the Manchester Evening News reported. The move follows an explosion in binge drink-related disorder in continental stag night hotspots like Prague, said the newspaper. Police in Prague say that 20% of all weekend crime in the Czech capital involves British men on stag nights. Czech tourism officials estimated there are some 500,000 British sex and booze tourists each year, said the Daily, and Manchester city councillors are now looking at ways of cracking down on troublemakers. In other news, the Czech foreign trade balance posted a 6 billion crown surplus in March, the equivalent of about $230 million. It was the best result for the month since 1993 and confirms a long-term favorable trend, said the Minister of Industry and Trade. Car and machinery exports accounted for the bulk of the surplus. The Czech currency, the crown, strengthened on the news to 23.12 crowns to the US dollar. The documentary Death in Gaza by British cameraman James Miller, who was killed during the film's shooting in 2003, has received the top prize at a human rights film festival in Prague. A total of 120 films were shown since April 27th at this year's seventh edition of the festival, organized by the Czech charity People in Need. The jury at Prague's One World 2005 Human Rights Documentary Film Festival said it appreciated the film's professional approach, its humanism, and its dynamic action. The film documents the Israeli army's destruction of hundreds of homes in the Palestinian territories. And finally, a look at the weather. Partly cloudy skies and scattered rain showers is in the forecast for the remainder of the week. Daytime temperatures aren't expected to go above 15 degrees Celsius. That's the end of the news. Stay tuned for the rest of our program.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the English language service of Czech radio, and my name is Peter Smith. 60 years after the Prague uprising against the Nazis at the end of World War II, the siege of the Czech radio building is reenacted. More on that in a moment. Also, we visit a picturesque village in rural England, which holds a very special place in Czech World War II history.
I didn't know who they were, and the ladies thanked me and asked me if I lived in the village, what my name was, and what did I do. I was at school then, of course. And she said, well, this is my husband, Dr. Edward Benesch, resident of Czechoslovakia.
He has quite a nostalgic edition of Radio Prague, so please don't go away. Exactly 60 years ago, on the 5th of May 1945, the Prague uprising against the German occupiers began here in this very building.
Voláme všechny Čechy, přijďte nám i hned na pomoc. Voláme všechny Čechy.
Calling all Czechs went the now legendary appeal over the airwaves as defiant journalists at the Czech radio building here on Vinohradská called on the people of Prague to rise up against their occupiers. In the 3 days that followed, over 2,000 Czechs lost their lives in intense street fighting that focused more than anywhere else here on the radio building. And no, that wasn't from the archives. On Thursday morning, once again, shots and explosions could be heard in the streets around the radio. This was the beginning of 4 days of events in the city to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the end of the war. I went along to the reenactment and spoke to one man who had seen the events in Prague 60 years ago.
I was here as a 16-year-old boy, you know.
You were 16 years old when this happened?
Yeah, and 1945, yes.
And you remember it the first time?
I was not exactly on this place. I was in another part of Prague, but I followed the whole situation every day and every night too, because we had to go to a air raid shelter, and we followed the broadcasting of the Czech radio, and we knew practically every minute what's going on.
Do you think it is important, these kind of reconstructions now, 60 years later?
I think it is important for two reasons. For the younger ones, it's something which should remind them of such bad things, dangerous things, and the power of evil, you know. And for the other ones, the elder, it's something like a memory and something which, when I see all the old uniforms, I'm a little touched.
One man there giving his account of what happened 60 years ago. Well, Radio Prague will be reporting on these events as they happen, including a huge parade of historical military vehicles and a fireworks display on Sunday evening. If you want to hear more about the reconstruction of the Battle for the Radio, which will be culminating on Saturday afternoon when all the streets around will be closed, tune into a special report in our Sunday programme. But this is also a time to remember those who fell. Yes, Thursday's event at the radio wasn't just a case of overgrown little boys playing with guns. When the shooting had stopped, wreaths were laid at the entrance to the radio building by the long list of those who fell in and around the building 60 years ago. A similar event was also staged on Thursday morning in the town hall on the Old Town Square, which was completely burnt out during the fighting. And to this day, all around Prague, you can still see bullet holes in the facades of many of the city's buildings and plaques marking the names of the dead who fell in the very last days of the war. On to other news. An American investment group has taken over the Czech truck maker Arvia. ODN Reconstructing Services plans to bring the Prague-based manufacturer back to profitability by recapturing past markets and forging ahead into new territory. The acquisition ends Daewoo Motors' decade-long foray into the Czech Republic. Yes, that's the sound of the paint room at Arvia Trucks, and as you can hear, ownership changes haven't brought work to a stop. Lyle Frink went along to investigate for Radio Prague and afterwards spoke to my colleague David Vaughan.
Arvia was one of the Czech trinity of truck makers, along with Lias and Tatra. And during the communist era, these three produced a full range of trucks for the socialist bloc. The Arvia niche were for the small and medium-sized vehicles that were used to haul everything from mail to bread. And in its best years, Arvia produced around 20,000 trucks.
And really, to this day, if you look out into the streets of Prague or any other Czech city, you will see hundreds of these little blue Arvia trucks, won't you?
You would be hard-pressed to not see an Arvia truck in the Czech Republic and Slovakia. And also, there's thousands more around the region.
But
there were problems. Arvia was purchased by the Korean Daewoo Motors in 1995. Arvia production last year was only 569 trucks, and this was pulled down by the financial problems of its owner, the Korean Daewoo Motors.
Which is now in receivership, isn't it?
Yes, it's quite a complicated receivership because Daewoo had industrial operations all over the globe and quite a bit of accounting fraud. It is a complicated mess.
So we've got this new owner who's come in. What do they plan to do to rescue the Arvia brand?
Well, first of all, their goals are to make 5,000 trucks within the next 3 years, to have an annual production of 5,000 trucks within 3 years. To get to this step, or to get to this stage, they want to reemphasize marketing and sales, introduce a new 12-ton truck by year-end, and then also put their factory to work for other automakers.
So who is this new owner, Odeon Restructuring Services?
Okay, Odeon is backed by American institutional capital, I guess you could say, and their focus is buying troubled companies, restructuring their operations and balance sheets, and then hopefully reselling these companies at a profit at a later time.
I mean, are they, in real terms, anything more than asset strippers in this particular case?
Their stated goal is to be asset restructuring, which means making the most productive parts of a company work as they see fit.
Well, which brings us to the company. I mean, it's well known that Daewoo invested a lot of money into it. So does Arvia have some potential and some benefits from that failed deal with Daewoo?
Arvia has considerable advantages. In fact, probably more than many Daewoo planned expansions in Central Europe. Daewoo invested about $200 million there. This included designing the new vehicle and expanding the production capabilities such as the assembly hall and the paint shop.
So you reckon that Arvia, the brand Arvia, does have a real chance of surviving?
I think the Arvia brand has a chance for surviving. It's a tough market where people go by tradition, but they also go by the just the financials. How much does a vehicle cost? How much they can resell it for later, and how well it performs the task.
That was Lyle Frink there. Now, Czech architecture has a long and rich tradition, but in the last few years, it has also come in for a lot of criticism as faceless shopping centres mushroom around the country. In order to improve the quality of contemporary Czech architectural design, the Czech Society of Architects organises an annual competition. On Wednesday, the international jury of the Grand Prix announced the winner. Martin Mikulay has more.
The competition is open to architects from all countries, but the buildings themselves have to be in the Czech Republic. As one member of the jury, Zdeněk Lukáš, explains, every architect or a group of architects submits a panel with photos of his work and the jury evaluates them.
It means to see all these panels this year, about 150, and then to choose about 15-20 candidates for Grand Prix and some prizes in about seven categories, like reconstruction, new building, urbanism, or interior design, for instance. Then it's necessary to go and see all these buildings in situ and then decide who is a winner.
This year, the Grand Prix was awarded to a team of young architects from the city of Brno who renovated and extended a sport facility in Brno's Kraví Hora district.
I think that all members of jury, including me, were enchanted with this beautiful example of pure architecture. Site is excellent. It's right in the center of Brno city, but on the top of the hill called Kraví Hora, with a nice landscape and nice view to the whole landscape of Brno. We also saw the interior and the background of the building. Everything was excellently done. Also, the transparent facades of building is nice because it looks like you are in the landscape. And also a connection with older part of swimming pools, which were built in the 60s, but sensitively restored and connected with a new building.
Bernd Lundsten from Finland, who chaired the jury, also praised the winning architecture. At the same time, he pointed out that he was quite surprised by the overall exceptional quality of the entries.
It was a surprise for me, actually, to see, because I have seen, it's many years since I last time was in Czechoslovakia at that time, and the race of the quality of Czech architecture today is a very, very good surprise for me to see. It is a high class, it belongs to the best again.
Bert Lundsten from Finland, ending that report by Martin Mikulay. And if you happen to be in Prague, you can see the architectural works in the competition at Prague's Modern Art Gallery in Hološevice. It will go on until May the 29th. You're listening to Radio Prague, and now time for another in our special series, Women in War. Zuzana Ružičková is one of Europe's most renowned harpsichord players and has made dozens of recordings during a career spanning over half a century. But 60 years ago, after three hellish years in a Nazi concentration camp, she feared she might never play again. Here she recalls coming home from the war to her hometown of Pilsen in West Bohemia when she was 18 years old.
We had to stay in quarantine until August. And then when we came home, of course, that was very, very difficult. First of all, we didn't find anybody from the family. 17 members of my family perished in the camps. And secondly, I had my career in mind all the time, hoping, and my hands were so badly damaged that my teacher said that there was no hope of my resuming my career as a concert pianist. So that was difficult.
Zuzana had been a talented 15-year-old when she was sent to the camps and at times believed she would never hear music again. So how did it feel when, with her hands gradually on the mend, she was able to sit at the keyboards and play once more?
Oh, wonderful. That's where I resolved to work and work and work, because it was, I realized that there was no life for me without music. It was awful because I had no technique, so it was not very moving. It was rather scary.
But she did manage to get her technique back, and a decade later won her first major international competition in the German city of Munich. So was it difficult playing in Germany just a decade after the fall of the Nazis?
To go to Munich was my only possibility to join a competition, so of course I went. The difficult thing to resolve was afterwards, when I already had my career, to ask myself, do I want to go to Germany and play there or not? In the end, I thought, well, there must be, and I met, there must be quite a lot of people in Germany who weren't the Nazis, and there was such a big culture which Germany had and which it could go back to. And I said to myself, if I were an entertainer, I probably wouldn't go. I wouldn't like to entertain the Germans, but to make the Germans realize that they had Bach and the whole spirit of Bach, that I thought was more or less a good thing.
The great Zuzana Ružičková will be appearing at the Prague Spring Music Festival on June the 2nd. You're tuned to Radio Prague. Time now for us to take a journey over to England and a picturesque village that holds a very special place in the archives of Czech World War II history.
And we must all stand together in order to prepare, after victory has been achieved, a peace in Europe, of which we could already today solemnly declare that all that we are passing through now, today, in this war, will never happen again.
Czechoslovak President in Exile Edvard Beneš addresses a crowd in England, where he and his cabinet were based throughout the Second World War.
Czechs were not really taught about what happened in Britain. People just learnt that President Beneš lived in London when he didn't.
Neil Rees is a local history enthusiast who has done a lot of research into the Czechoslovak government in exile, and in particular their stay in the picturesque village of Aston Abbots in the southern English county of Buckinghamshire.
This location was chosen because where Beneš lived for a short time in Putney in London was being heavily bombed by the Germans, and his main offices in London were also bombed. He had offices in Park Street, London. They were completely bombed by the Germans. And his colleagues were very worried for his safety. And they thought that maybe the Germans were even targeting Putney to try and kill him. We don't know that. But anyway, Jan Masaryk, who was basically President Beneš's best friend, he used to spend weekends in the countryside near here. And he had friends called the Rothschilds. And they lived in the next village called Wing. And he asked them if they had any friends that might rent them their houses. And Mr. Rothschild One of his best friends was Mr. Morton that lived here in Aston Abbas, and Mr. Morton agreed to rent his house for £21 a week to President Benesch.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ambassador would like to say a few words to you, and then we're going to have two other quick speeches afterwards, so could you please be quiet? Thank you.
One of the organisers of special festivities in Aston Abbas last weekend welcomes the Czech ambassador to Britain, Stefan Föhler. The ambassador describes the significance of this tiny village of 350 in Czechoslovak history.
I was obviously thinking not only about those 60 years which passed since the Second World War, but I was very much thinking also about these 4 years the Aston Abbots had provided the Czechoslovak exile government with the shelter and with a friendly environment to work in that very difficult period. Many very, very important decisions throughout the Second World War, but also many important decisions for the future of Czechoslovakia were made and debated and agreed here in Aston Abbots. So it's a very important and special place close to our hearts.
The Czech national anthem plays at a special service in the Aston Abbots Anglican Church, held to commemorate the end of the war and the time President Benesch's cabinet spent here between 1940 and 1945. Vojta Levin served in the Czech Armored Brigade. He was one of the president's personal bodyguards.
We paraded at 8 o'clock in the evening, where the street was from 8 till midnight, midnight till 4, and 4 till 8 in the morning. And when President Benesch went out in the neighborhood, there were two or four of us with him, just in case something happened, because I was always a thought that German parachutists might land here and might either kill him or try to get him. It was not just here, because the Queen of Holland lived next door, and General de Gaulle also lived quite near. So this whole area was in danger, or so they said.
Many local people remember the Benesches fondly. They shared some of their stories with me.
I knew him very well, yes. We used to meet, and he used to go for a walk every Sunday morning or after lunch on Sunday with his wife. Initially, I opened the gate for them. I didn't know who they were. And the ladies thanked me and asked me if I lived in the village, what my name was and what did I do. I was at school then, of course. And she said, "Oh, this is my husband, Dr. Edward Benesch, president of Czechoslovakia." And we shook hands, and the president couldn't speak very much English. I couldn't speak any Czech. So his wife acted as interpreter both ways. She would translate the English into Czech and Czech into English. And we used to, and after that, when we used to meet, we used to often have a chat, and I used to ask the president a lot about his country and all that sort of thing, so I felt that I learned quite a bit about it. I certainly knew more about Czechoslovakia than Neville Chamberlain did, which wasn't difficult. But he was a marvellous man. He was very popular.
He was a delightful man, and we made great friends with two Czechs, Rudolf Klimek, who came from Olomouc. And he was a wonderful friend to our family. And Michael, I can't remember Michael's surname. And in the church room, there were a couple of items that he gave me during when he went back to Czechoslovakia.
My mother used to make a lot of homemade wine, and she used to cure hams, and quite a number of the Czech soldiers used to come and have wine and some food. And one of the soldiers, Charles Spalenka, he married my young aunt.
Mm-hmm. One of the most dramatic events of the whole war was the assassination of the Nazi protector of Bohemia and Moravia, Reinhard Heydrich. Carried out on the orders of President Benesch, it was a turning point in the way the Allies perceived Czechoslovakia. The plans for this mission were prepared in part in Aston Abbots. Neil Rees again.
President Benesch was involved in a lot of planning of the liberation and the resistance. And one of the most famous operations he was involved in planning was the assassination of Heydrich. Now, that was planned in all sorts of different places, and Aston Abbots was only a small part of that. But his military intelligence staff, which was Colonel Morovets and Emil Strankmuller, they lived about 10 miles away in another village called Addington. And people in Addington remember that President Benesch was there sometimes. And there's film footage showing Morovets here in Aston Abbots. So they must have discussed the whole of their secret operations here. And it's recorded that on the night before the assassins flew to the Czech Republic, they spent some time with President Benesch here at Aston Abbots. And it's recorded that he was visibly crying with emotion as he greeted them to go.
Kate Barrett with that report, and we're out of time here on Radio Prague. From me, Peter Smith, until next time, bye-bye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 9415, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.